And here we go. It's a lunchtime social debate on the Monday morning mix, or as it now is, the Monday afternoon mix. And in the studio, I'm delighted to say, joined by the Baroness and Lord Philby, Kim and Dave. Good afternoon, guys.
Hello.
Can I just pull you up on something?
Yes,
Andy?
Of course. Yeah.
It's not afternoon yet.
Is it not?
Afternoon is that division between morning and afternoon, but it's when you have lunch, and I haven't had lunch yet. Finest moment of the day, normally, lunch. Therefore, we're still morning.
I'm mourning for you. I'm worried about you.
That's me told then.
That's it.
Well, ignore. I just make a lot of noise at this particular point while I move
just,
my mic.
I've just got to put it into perspective, you know.
Right, well, for the rest of the world, it's the afternoon, but for Lord Philby, it's still the morning.
That's right, yeah, I'm still on morning mode.
Right, let's start again. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Andy, and how are you?
I'm very well.
Good. And how was your muesli this morning? Was it good? Well, I thought it would be, yes. We've only just had the breakfast show, haven't we?
I did mention in the trail on Facebook for the show post that we would combine our intellect and bring to bear on the major issues of the day. Well, that's the first issue sorted, and you can pretty much gauge the level of the combined intellect, certainly between Dave and myself. It's barely registers on the screen.
Absolutely.
But fortunately, the Baroness Kim is here to inject some...
whatever.
Well, it's all going terribly well.
No, it's all about the stomach, you see, with you men, isn't it? They do say the way to a man's heart is through his stomach.
Oh, okay.
And I'm here to say, yeah, that's absolutely true.
See, even though you're outnumbered, we're quaking.
I'm sure you are. It's that gaze.
Yeah, it is.
It's that death stare, yeah, as my son calls it.
So, guys, we've got all sorts of things that we might talk about today. One of the items I had on here was... the cost of hospital food at St Mary's, maybe. The idea of a speed limit, island-wide speed limit of around 20 miles an hour. Talking about James Bond, 007.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig currently being... trying to be lured back into the role, but I wonder who we think is the best or was the best James Bond, and indeed who might be the best next James Bond. And then something else on the NHS-funded homeopathy treatments we might get to as well, Kim, a little bit later.
Yeah, maybe.
But since it was in the local news, Dave, and I know you were particularly interested in this, we did talk about the future of the Isle of Wight Festival, which is, when I say in doubt, I think it hinges on an Isle of Wight Council meeting later this month as to how Solo will respond to the possibly revised land costs. But more immediate concern perhaps is the future or lack of for Ryde Arena, which is padlocked up and currently out of business.
I was going to say I was reading the article, well, the news feature out of the county press earlier on, and you know, the figures are just staggering. I mean, £130,000 a year rent.
That's an
enormous
figure.
Before you've actually cut a blade on that ice, you've got to find £130,000. Mm. I mean, that's...
Well, they were never going to find that. I'm sorry. Is this recent? This isn't the money that they've had to stump up for years.
Well, no,
is it?
I think this is
this
contract.
This is a new contract, supposedly.
I think they've signed a contract with this company
before. I think it was only
about
a year and a half ago that the contract was renewed,
was it?
Yeah. That's right, because it did look as if it was going to fold.
And the volunteers all got together. They all backed it. They worked really hard. So somebody has made a bit of an error signing on the dotted line,
I feel. Well, the contract must have had all this in it, surely.
Well, you would have thought so.
And you would have thought lawyers and all the rest of it would have looked at it.
They didn't get a lawyer involved.
No, maybe not. But it just... I don't know.
£130,000 a year for a venue like that is a huge amount to try and find.
I mean... It's always... I mean, the volunteers, you say, did an absolutely tremendous job.
They did.
Job.
Yeah, just absolutely.
But
yeah,
how on earth they generate enough wealth from the facilities there, which are, it has to be said, very good. Yeah. As an ice rink and the entertainment suite and everything else, it's been upgraded and very, very well run, I think, over the years. But there's only so much you can do there. I mean, obviously, the White Link Raiders, devastating for them, the local ice hockey team.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Buccaneers as well. That is terrible, terrible news for them, because they've been moderately successful over the years, and now they don't have a home base. I don't know what they're going to do, but I don't see how they could generate enough money to pay that kind
especially
of rent. What did you say?
No, if I read that correctly, they weren't allowed access to the bar or any catering facilities either.
Well, I think there's been this leak issue that's been ongoing for a while. I remember reading it some time back, where they've had a leaking roof.
That's
which
right,
has basically imposed itself on the build, you know, to their use of the building.
Yeah.
And there's obviously an ongoing issue between landlords and rentors, whichever way round it is, as to, you know, how they overcome that. It that obviously creates problems, but you would have thought negotiation, and you don't know because it doesn't actually say that, and I'm not party to it. But you would have thought negotiation should have taken place between the owners and the people renting it, you know, to actually come to some compromise, because the owners are not going to get their value for their pension fund, as they've stated in there.
Unless they're going to develop it.
What is the future for the site, the building, you know, an alternative? What will be the future?
Well, they've said it's going to be, I think, did I just read that they said it's going to be something for everybody? So that'll be flats then on the top. And something smaller entertainment-wise possibly on the bottom. I may have that round the wrong way, but... It sniffs to me, I think.
Is it another community asset, shall we call it that, in terms of not being a community, I mean, it's a commercial enterprise, but as an asset to the island and particularly to the Ryde area? I mean, these community asset sort of approaches to things, surely there's an element of that involved in it.
Well, I would have thought so. I'd be surprised if there's not another fight goes on. I mean, I don't know where they stand, if the bailiffs have come in already, but I can't...
Well, padlocks are on, and I don't think access is there for anyone, as far as I know.
Possession is 9/10 of the law, as they say.
Yeah, and the landlord has the whip hand on this.
Absolutely, and if he's been been badly dealt with, then he has every right and every reason to do it. But
saying that we're presuming that the rent has not been paid and therefore the landlord has taken this step? I mean, do we know precisely
that's what the county press featured at, or the news item actually suggests
the letter
that,
seems to yeah
that's right that they've not paid their due, you know, their due amount.
Well, if that is indeed proves to be the case, then commercial rule will rule. And you know, if you can't afford to pay the rent on a property for whatever purpose it's designed and however much valued the service and facility is, if you ain't paying the rent, you ain't getting the use.
No, that's right.
And that's hard commercial fact, as sad as it is.
That's right. I mean as Kim sort of pointed out, you know, if there is going to be, you know, a rebuild, it's a commercial development there, and they can make it into all sorts of other bits and pieces. Then I suppose, you know, then they have every right to try and do that and actually generate proper income. I would have thought an ice rink is a fairly limited income stream.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, this is my point. Is it a valuable asset in terms of a tourist attraction or for locals during the entire year?
I think it was a valuable asset for the locals. I mean, it was the locals that all went in to fight for it. And I mean, as you quite rightly say, what are the Raiders going to do? So we've lost a team, you know, which would again bring revenue in, and it brings notice to the public about the island.
But we have also... Have we not had live bands there?
They have had concerts there. Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah.
So, I mean, I saw Elkie Brooks there. I was freezing. But I did.
Yeah, you were in goal, I think.
I sat on the ice. It was cold.
Talk about cheap seats.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
No, it's you know, it obviously that's another way of generating a revenue stream. I haven't seen any bands there for a while.
No, I don't
now.
Think it's been perhaps... Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, the management do what they do, but, I mean, it doesn't seem that the facility itself perhaps has been exploited commercially in a way that has guaranteed its future,
right.
And clearly its future is now seriously in doubt.
And maybe the actual property owners have decided that grab it by its thingies, and...
I think the current owners knew what they were doing when they pitched the rent, $130,000, sorry.
Well,
I mean, that was
Well, going back to that, I mean, that is an astonishing figure, as you highlighted at the very top of this, Dave. I don't know how on earth anyone could have conceived, even looking at their figures and hoping for the best, you know, preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. You've got to wonder how they ever imagined that they were going to meet that annual rental bill, irrespective of the running costs. I mean, keeping ice, at the appropriate temperature must cost a fortune in energy bills.
Well, you would have thought so.
So it's a very expensive enterprise. I mean, but a very, very valuable local asset, as we've already said.
Yeah.
very sad, though, for the island, for tourism, particularly for the locals, as you say, Kim, and especially for the local ice hockey teams that I know have struggled to keep their heads above water financially over the years, but have good support from island businesses and travelling fans that go with them to away games and so on. So that is very, very concerning indeed. And we'll keep an eye on that one. But that, the festival, I mean, I know that people will say, well, the only thing that's constant is change. And that is a fair point, I suppose. And things will change. But you do wonder whether, and it's nothing to do with Brexit or anything, but in terms of austerity and people not having pounds in their pockets, I don't know if we're starting to feel the pinch in things that we thought were immovable.
Absolutely. I mean, the Isle of Wight Festival has grown exponentially over the last, I mean, in the last 10 years or however long it is since it came back again.
Yeah, about 15, 16 years, in fact, it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's grown quite nicely in that point, and they obviously, the councillors, their landlords,
this is a parallel sort of thing in a way, isn't it, because as I mentioned at the top of this, the council have a budgetary meeting to consider the what I think are the land costs for the site itself, and until they decide on what they're billing Solo for the site or the use of the site and whether Solo can respond and meet their renewed figures, it's all in the balance, isn't it?
I think it's quite a concern for everybody who puts on events on the island, because...
Well, exactly, that's the point,
because quite often what happens is that the top of the pile, i.e. the Isle of Wight Festival, which is a proper money generator, if they can afford to pay it, then it trickles down to the people...
Absolutely.
You know, the little football teams who use the pitch and whatever.
Yeah.
Suddenly they've got to find more money.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to be very careful with this, otherwise we're going to have loads of unused land, because people have just suddenly, as with the ice rink, they're just suddenly pulling out and going, well, we can't afford it anymore, and that's it, and suddenly the whole
deck of cards.
It's me waving my hands. No, the whole edifice topples.
It was a very good mime. Yeah. I like that very much indeed. I'm not even going to begin to describe what you were doing there, but I got the idea. But the whole deck of cards, just begins to, disappear. And the knock-on effects to other things, as you say,
it's to us as an island. I mean, we in inverted commas don't see a great amount of straightaway results from the Isle of Wight Festival, because most of the people come across and it's mainly kept on site or within that confined.
But I mean, the profile of the island is.
But if we suddenly start to lose, that generation of income, then it falls down for everybody else.
And the feature that we have on the national, indeed international stage with some of these events, it's very important for the island. Okay, we're going to come back after these and talk about something else. This is the Lunchtime Social Debate on Vectis Radio.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Have you looked at your carpets lately? Are they fit to be seen, or do they let you down? Or maybe they could really do with a freshening up to get rid of some of those stains and smells. Whatever the problem with your carpets, curtains or upholstery, you need ChemDry first. Call us for a quote on 295 518. No matter what the material, be it leather, cotton or silk, ChemDry first have the tools, training and experience to ensure they look their best. All cleaning products are 100% safe and non-toxic. Call 295 518 or go to www.chemdryfirst.co.uk to book a free quotation and claim your free can of spot remover. We offer a no-quibble money-back guarantee on every job, so you have nothing to lose. That number again is 295 518.
Andy Gustar is here to tell us about Bring a Friend at Hamilton's Fine Foods.
Bring a Friend is a scheme we're running for our existing customers to take away a voucher and to bring a friend in with that voucher next time, so that you each receive a pack of our famous ham, our traditional ham and local ham. We're going to keep this going hopefully for around about 2.5 to 3 months. When you turn up, initially you'll be given a voucher, and on that voucher you'll find there's a small form to fill out as regards to your details, your name, your telephone number or your email address. We want to build a database of who can keep you in contact with our ongoing offers. We do some spectacular offers of a very good quality meat.
Hamilton's are in Newport, they're in Pyle Street. Where else are you?
We're in Cowes High Street, Witton Bridge. We also have a shop now on Dodder Industrial Estate.
Hamilton's Fine Foods, the best local butcher in town.
What the hell do you want?
Please, sir, I don't know how to put together a radio jingle, and I'm ever so interested in radio broadcasting.
Sit down, maggot, and watch what I do. Read this into the microphone.
This is the Vectis Radio Breakfast Show.
Now watch what happens when I put these effects on.
This is the Vectis Radio Breakfast Show.
Well, Governor, no kidding. You can do all that just from the skills you learn on the 4Ps project.
That and so much more.
Oh, wow, I can't believe this is a free course. I must be in heaven.
Heaven's not as good as this, kid. Now get out of my sight.
To find out more, email me, ian.mac@vectisradio.com, and you could be the next big noise in radio.
Hi, I'm Tom from the 4Ps Project. I've been asked to do a promo for the Retro Show. I don't know why. All the stuff played on that show was in the charts before I was even born. Anyway... The Retro Show is 3 hours of magical musical memories from 10 every Sunday on Vectis Radio, presented by Calvin Curry. Ah, that explains it. I've met him and he's about 1,000 years old. So basically, every Sunday morning, there's 3 hours of old music presented by an old guy. Whatever.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666, or add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local. So local.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
And we're back. And Kim, Dave and myself, Andy Knight, here on the Lunchtime Social Debate on Vectis Radio this Monday. I'm going to say afternoon and see what Dave says. No, he still hasn't had lunch.
I still haven't had lunch, yeah.
Now, James Bond. Now, we are, I think James Bond, probably one of the most iconic names in cinema. The franchise has lasted for, what, it must be 50-odd years, I guess, something like that. There have been various Bonds, of course, over the years. The latest has been Daniel Craig, who has said he will never do another Bond, but he is being dangled. Huge carrots have been dangled in front. I don't know if you like carrots, but he is.
I'm shaking my head because that's old news.
Yes.
He has now come out of his little closet and said actually he would miss doing James Bond again. Yes.
Ah.
It's a typical paparazzi news media thing. He made a quote, I believe he said something about he didn't want to do it ever again, and, but apparently he just literally finished filming on the last film. And he, you know what it's like, you get fed up with going to the post office every day,
you do sometimes.
You know, so you come in and go, I don't want to do that again, and it was kind of like that. So consequently the news buffs took that on board. But
would I be terribly disingenuous if I said that that remark might have been underpinned by a commercial approach, that
possibly,
I'm never doing this
possibly.
Again oh there's another
and,
nought
oh, look,
appeared on
150
that.
Million this time to do it. Yeah, I think so. I think it's all commercial, but I think you'll see him again. He is allegedly the producer's first choice, and so he should be, because personally I think he's the best one so far. Because
out of everything from day one.
And the reason I think that is because he plays it closest to the books, and you know I'm a bit
that I think is a very good point. I think if how many people though have I know perhaps all we have, but I read all the Ian Fleming James Bond books when I was a teenager,
and I'm reading the Anthony Horowitz's as well. They're very good as well.
But sticking to the book, the ethos of the book in terms of the character of Bond, I think that I would probably, I'd probably have to agree with you, I guess. No, Daniel Craig perhaps is the closest to the Bond character as written by Fleming, although, I don't know, I think Connery just edges it maybe for me because of the humour he had.
And because He was the first.
It's on a Blackman. That's what.
It's on a Blackman. That's all that's about. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's
I knew
not
you,
looking
Jimmy.
Bad for 90 odd either. She's looking really good. I think.
But didn't Fleming have some humour built into the Bond character that Connery
very
kind
wry.
Of? Yeah. No, but that.
But it right. got worse over time. Didn't
but Craig
it?
I mean, seems to me to be devoid more. Of humour.
Actually, he's not. You've just got to catch it. You've got to watch it. And
oh, maybe it's a female
there.
Thing. Maybe I'm missing.
Oh, I don't know. Well, it might be. No, there are. You're very subtle bits. Mm. But it is very subtle. It's not as obvious as it was with all the others. And, of course, by the time it got to Roger Moore, I mean, it's been purely played
oh,
for
yeah.
laughs.
It was almost a
parody.
Spoof,
it really
it? Yeah.
was.
Yeah.
It was just ridiculous. Mm. So, no, I get what you're saying about Sean Connery. I mean, I still think he's the main man. I think he's a great actor, and I think he started it off very, very well.
Mm.
I think there's been some mixed fortunes in between, but I actually finally think they've got the right character.
Mm-hmm.
For the books, but that's because I'm a bit of a purist like that.
And I suppose because of the you know the recent success of the Daniel Craig version, that he has become indispensable, really, hasn't he? It's a bit like Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
it wouldn't work with anyone else, and one wonders. I mean, just
I don't
coming.
Know how they're going to get out of this.
Well,
actually.
Yeah. Well, let's just take a left step here and say, if not Craig, who else? I mean, Tom Hiddleston was the name bandied
thin.
Around.
Too thin. Too thin.
Dismissed with two words there. Too thin. Right, move on.
Don't get me wrong, I like Tom Hiddleston. I think The Night Manager was brilliant. I think he's a great actor. Anybody that can play Loki and then go off and do Hank Williams has got something.
Yeah,
you
know,
he's just brilliant.
Yeah.
But I don't see him as Bond. Idris Elba, yes. I know I've just said I'm a purist, but he has actually said that he's too old for the role.
Maybe.
But he's got the right sort of build, the right kind of nastiness, if you like.
Yeah, the sort of
it's
danger.
It's quite cold. Bond was written as quite cold. I mean, and so I think that would be good.
Austin Powers, maybe?
Definitely not. Can you imagine Shrek coming out in a black suit? I mean,
well, no, but the
on,
Austin
you know.
Powers was great.
Yeah,
I love
Austin
it.
Powers and Shrek later on. And no. Totally wrong,
Dave, any suggestions for, if not Craig, then who?
No, I don't have. I
there
don't.
Isn't anyone, Southgate. Is there?
I'm surprised you haven't put Gareth Southgate in.
No.
Well, he's doing everything else at the moment.
That's
why
right,
not?
He's doing the old, deal. No, I'm not. I really don't know because I'm. I don't know. I get lost in all these.
Apart from there is a couple of actors, and unfortunately, I don't know their name. But I mean, ruggedly. But again, I think they're too pretty. It's a really strange thing because. Pierce Brosnan was very pretty.
Yes, but he was
had
never
a little
Bond.
Bit more of a wry sense of humour. He was very sort of
and at
okay.
least two facial expressions. Yeah,
at least two. you know, it's difficult because I can't think of anybody actually apart from Craig at this moment in time.
Mm.
I mean, is it Tom Young? He's been sort of what about Tom Young then? Mm. He's too young.
Right.
Really?
Right.
He's. I think he wouldn't have the worldliness that Bond has.
Well, we can expect a call. I'm waiting for the phone light here to flash because I suspect that the Cubby Broccoli Foundation will be in touch to ask your advice.
I'm sure they will.
I know. Too thin, too young, too young.
But I think, you know, I think we can actually forget about the James Bond actor. I think we should be there throwing ourselves into the mix for the filming.
Oh,
you
what,
know,
on the
you
island?
Think of the money that comes with filming
these
things.
That'll be the
things.
Day, you mean?
Yeah, the suspense, you know, going down Alan Bay chairlift with
us. Absolutely, yeah.
With a gun.
That's it.
Shoot!
Sliding
shoot.
Down the blue slip of clay, you know, I mean, it's there, isn't it?
Right, I'm going to call a halt to this. I think we've exhausted this particular topic. It's now just getting
it's
very, very...
It's not serious anyway.
No, that's right.
Something I do. No, I'm going to stop you in your tracks there, Kim, while you recover yourself, because I wanted to mention this. Now, homeopathy treatments. Now, the NHS do fund homeopathy, and I looked into this a little bit. I know that you have very strong views on this, which I'll come to you in just a second, if I may. But the NHS themselves actually quote them, their opinion of homeopathy treatments is that there is no good quality evidence that it is effective. That's the NHS stand on this. No good quality evidence that homeopathy is effective. And yet, the NHS, in other words, our money, do actually budget £5 million a year for homeopathy treatments. Now, admittedly, that is a ridiculously minuscule percentage. I think 0.004% of the NHS budget, which is about £130 billion a year. So £5 million is not a lot. However, what about homeopathy treatments on the NHS? £5 million, should it be more? Are they really countering their own opinion by saying that there's no evidence that it works, but still spending £5 million of our money on it? I mean, what do you think we should be doing with homeopathy through the NHS?
I would have to ask them if they really don't think there's any benefit to it, why are they doing it?
Yeah.
Why are they putting the money out there?
That's my point.
Because, you know, most of us that want homeopathy go and pay for it.
Mm. There's a lot of private.
There is an awful lot of private, excuse me. I mean, the difference between doctors and homeopaths is that a homeopath will actually treat the cause, which is why they may feel there's no significant change.
Well, rather than the symptom.
They don't treat the symptom.
Okay.
You go to the doctors, you get something for the symptom.
All right, okay.
Homeopaths, they will look into, they do quite a lot of research on you, the person,
mm-hmm.
and yes, the medicine that they give you does take time to work.
Hmm.
But it does work, and it's not a mindset. It is because it takes longer to treat the root cause than it does to treat the symptom.
Well, why would the NHS, as a policy statement, say that there is no good quality evidence that homeopathic treatments are effective? I mean, I'm not putting you on the spot here, but is there counter evidence, contrary to that, that there is
not
actually.
Contrary is good.
contrary might be the right word, contrary. Actually, because is there evidence? I mean, you're quite clear on the fact that it's a valid form of treatment, and I understand that. Is there any statistical evidence available?
I'd need to ask my ex-GP. See, I was very lucky. I had a GP who actually did homeopathy.
Really? A GP?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, a GP. And she was brilliant.
Mm.
And she certainly sorted me out.
Mm.
And she thoroughly believed in it. And she believed in it to a degree, a little more than she used to do the other stuff. So, you know, it's a difficult... I would say maybe they can't afford to do the comparison research.
Mm.
Because they are being very, tight. Obviously, they have to be with their budgets. It has to be.
Mm.
But, I think if they went and sort of looked... You can find out. You can find out how successful it is. You just got to read the right books.
I mean, I
on Google or something.
0.000 something of a percentage of the NHS budget, I mean, is minuscule.
And that's what I'm saying. I don't think they treat it very seriously.
Well, it
personally.
Seems to me if they're going to spend £5 million, if you put it in that way, rather than the minuscule percentage, decimal percentage, it just seems to me if you're going to spend £5 million, which nevertheless is still a huge amount of money,
you should get some results.
Either go for it or don't.
Yeah, and that's really how
they,
I feel.
They seem to be having speaking with forked tongue here for me.
I think they are, but they are becoming more open to other things because they are now becoming more open to, for example, energy healing, and you can.
Well, the NHS are.
Yeah.
Really.
They're not. They don't shout about it, but they have been known to employ energy healers. If people have got that sort of bent,
I know what you would perhaps like to see, but realistically, do you see in these times of austerity and cutbacks affecting services, do you see an increase over the years in reliance on, I'm going to say, alternative medicines?
Yeah,
I know
yeah.
you just to, as an umbrella, but including homeopathy in that. Would you? I know you would probably like to, but do you realistically see an increase in reliance on that through the NHS?
I don't think so. I think the NHS are too careful. They've got to be careful. They haven't got a lot of money, and you will find that people that want that sort of thing don't know that they can get it on the NHS. They don't publicise it, and people will go and spend on it. They will actually go privately to sort themselves out. I think that's sad, personally, but. Going back to another point that we've also made before, it is time for people to take responsibility for their own and be accountable for their own health. Because, there's an awful lot of things going on, smoking, drinking, I can name them all, which everything in moderation, nobody's saying you must not do it, but we all know that as a nation, we tend to overdo everything.
But I was interested in the comment you were making earlier there, because it seems to me that a lot of the commercial-based medical treatments, shall we say, that are advertised privately and on TV and so on and so forth, are symptom-based.
Yeah, they are.
And that alternative medicines, perhaps I'll just stick to homeopathy in this case because that's what I introduced it as, but that those don't really get the message across that they're causal based rather than symptomatic based.
No, it's something that you wouldn't really know unless you got into it, because people think, oh,
but why isn't there more noise being made about it then?
I think there is in some quarters, but it's just not picked up. I mean, you can buy all sorts of health magazines will tell you, but it's slow. It's really slowly getting out there that actually it's time to stop looking at the... I mean, just very briefly, because it's something I thought about while we were talking, there's a lovely sign in the local GP's which actually says, we will not treat you for a cold. No medicine will get rid of your cold. Mm. And that is true. Mm. You've just got to work through the cold.
And yet, how many billions of pounds a year is the pharmaceutical industry worth in terms of cold cures?
Because, cold relief.
Yeah.
Actually, they've found it doesn't work. Mm. And you're just as better off going home, taking proper ginger, proper honey, in water, and...
It'll do just as much good.
And it'll do just as much good, and you rest. And that's all you can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's... kind of where we're at. It's they are coming to the conclusion that they do need to treat the cause, but how quickly that's going to evolve, I don't know. I don't know, and it's a shame, because it needs to be out there now, really.
Can I just interject?
Yes, of course.
We're saying that there's very little evidence as to whether it works or doesn't work. I would have thought that's got to be a good subject for our medical students who don't want to just do bog standard medicine, to actually run down, and the funding is normally there for those sort of things in small ways, but these people are very keen, they're very young, and they should be able, you know, they should be able to put that sort of thing together and actually give a thrust.
I think you're absolutely right, and I would add to that, Dave, on that very, very point, which I think is true, and I know this has been said and been done before. I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before, but for thousands and thousands of years, from all sorts of cultures, from Chinese culture to African culture to South American to even European, but for thousands and thousands of years, causal medicine, if I can call it that, has been in operation. Well, we're still around today, so something must work. And looking back at what would have been, I presume, Kim, you're nodding, natural remedy, shall we say,
which, Ayurvedic, if you like.
Yeah, so if they worked for thousands of years, and medical pharmaceutical advances, shall we say, have perhaps only been a couple of hundred or so years in the making, from penicillin and so on, all, you know, vital advances, of course, but surely the thousands of years of history of, I'm going to say, alternative medicine. I mean, that's the majority of medicine that the human race has been accessible for the last...
I'm going to be really naughty.
Go on.
Because I believe the pharmaceutical companies keep this information back, because obviously it affects their profits, doesn't it?
Mm.
If you can find out that actually by doing lemon and ginger, lemon and honey for every day of your life actually will keep you in top form, who's going to want that? Because the little pills are what makes people the money. And I honestly believe that's what's going on.
That's an interesting point.
Sorry, but I do. I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but I honestly believe that. And it's the same as I believe there's a cure for cancer. And I'm absolutely convinced that, because holistically, if you eat the right diet, it can help relieve it. I'm not going to say it cures it, because it depends what sort of cancer you've got. But I know two people that have actually gone very, very well just by changing their diet radically. But they're fine and they are in remission. You know, you tell me.
Well, I think your point, Dave, there, riding in on the back of that from Kim, which I appreciate, about more serious and dedicated research, is possibly something that should, you know, £5 million pounds on, you know, on homeopathic treatment through the NHS, even in these times of austerity, you would have thought that somebody could fund research that you're suggesting.
Absolutely, and that would then run alongside, you know, the other things that they're doing as actual qualifying students. But if you get a youngster or youngsters involved, and their keenness and their their, quite often, their left field way of thinking,
because we're a fresh approach.
You know, at our age, we're quite often set in our ways.
A very fair point. Interesting stuff. We'll be back after these again with some more to talk about. This is the Lunchtime Social Debate on Vectis Radio with Kim, Dave, and myself, Andy Knight. It's around 23 to 1 o'clock.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
See how the Romans lived and worked on the Isle of Wight. Brading Roman Villa and Cafe are housed in a modern, eco-friendly building, offering easy access for everyone without climbing stairs or walking miles. It's an oasis of peace and tranquility, set away from busy roads, with plenty of space for children to play in safely, and there's free parking too. The villa also has a gallery for local artists where works for sale are displayed. Enjoy the spacious licensed cafe with its stunning panoramic view of Sandown Bay, in which you'll find locally sourced food and drinks and a tempting selection of homemade cakes from our chefs Ben and Nikki. Then visit the award-winning museum with its welcome shade. There's a volunteer guide to explain it to you. Explore 10,000 years of domestic life with a great selection of activities included in the entry price and some of the best Roman mosaics in Europe. But really, there's so much more to Brading Roman Villa than the Romans. There's also food, art, meadows, and peace for the whole family. Open from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. every day. Come to Brading Roman Villa and treat yourself.
Leader cabs have arrived on the Isle of Wight. A modern taxi service that's simple to book, safe to travel, and secure to pay. Travel in comfort and arrive in style with our top-of-the-range vehicles. Our friendly, well-trained drivers will take you to any destination on the island and beyond. We also provide transport for special occasions, like parties, weddings, and corporate travel. In a hurry, save 10% and use our app to book your cab in advance. So call us today on 01983 33000. Leader Cabs. Quick, easy, safe and secure.
Check out the Riverside Centre Carpentry Shop next door to Vectis Radio. Skilled craftsmen have a small shop that's set up to donate to the Riverside charity. The shop contains nest boxes, tables, garden furniture, wooden horses. Practically anything wooden can be made to order. The skilled craftsmen are down to earth and really friendly. So don't be shy. Come and see them here at the Riverside Centre in Newport.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666, or add us on Skype. It's vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
It's James and Judy here, the island's version of Richard and Judy. We've been married for longer than Judy cares to mention, haven't we?
That's true, James.
And together we run Ramshackle Pop-Up Cinema from our Global Nerve Centre in Bembridge. We're bringing lots of bickering, wittering...
That's me.
...and twittering...
That's James, the technical one.
...to Vectis Radio every Wednesday afternoon from 1 to 4. And that's our show, Ramshackle Mashup. It's a heady mix of music, previews and reviews of things going on the island, including arts, and breaking news about local eateries, cycling and special places.
And film.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
And we're back again. This is the Lunchtime Social Debate on a Monday afternoon. I'm still saying afternoon, Dave.
Yep.
No signs of lunch in your beard.
No lunch to... Well, I think we're on for a topic on about lunch.
Well,
but,
talking of lunch, yes, I wanted to bring this up. Thank
you for
that.
It's very important. Very, very important.
Absolutely.
It really is.
Well, on that very, very point, fortunately for you, you're lucky that... that you have no need to be in a hospital ward at the moment.
No.
But there are, of course, a lot of people that are. And our own hospital just up the road, literally from where we are now on the quay here in Newport, St Mary's Hospital. There is a recent report saying that poor catering equipment, an out-of-date kitchen, and the whole of the eating area there is in dire need of refurbishment and updating and reorganising. And that's a pretty poor reflection on the state of our single local hospital catering for the island and its needs. And the other thing that came out of this report is that the hospital apparently currently spends £9.40 on food services per patient per day. Excuse me. On that basis, a lot of people would say, well, for £9.40 I could feed myself quite well. But of course, when you're dealing on, and which is why you guys and your experience dealing on scaling economies of scale, yeah, where you're catering for several hundred people, a day. That, to me, would seem a reasonable amount of money, is it not?
Not for three meals a day, I don't believe, especially not the quality that you would hope for people in hospital.
Do you think that the quality of food in hospital should be at the very least above average because of the condition of the people who are basically the clients?
Personally, I do, but I also think they could be doing different food, which they don't. I mean, my experience of it is not very good. I've seen it, I've eaten it, unfortunately. They need to really look at it. And somebody will say, oh, don't be daft, you can't they're not supposed to be making money on it, they're supposed to be providing a service. So for me, I don't think £9.40 is enough. It's nowhere near enough. I suspect the kitchens do need overhauling, but actually it's a poor workman that blames his tools. So,
it's partly got to be surely down to past investment, because the service that St Mary's delivers on a national scale, apparently, is very near the bottom in terms of the national scale of the quality of food for the costs, in terms of what I've been looking at. But you've got to wonder, basically, as I understand it, most of the food is brought in frozen and then is heated up and put on warming trolleys. And while the menu itself may not, it's not really an issue about the menu. I mean, Yorkshire pudding, roast beef, chicken curry, ham, chicken pie are things that have been mentioned. Mostly frozen, mostly heated, and then kept warm on a trolley. So by the time it reaches the people, so there's got to be an issue about past investment in the facilities there for the kitchen and so on. You wonder whether there is an alternative, but then it will always, I guess, come at some considerable cost in terms of producing fresh food.
I know somebody that temped in their kitchen for 6 months and she was absolutely appalled. She actually at that time had no catering experience and was allowed to cook.
Really?
How they get away with that when we know
but when you say cook things. I mean you are experienced and qualified cooks.
Absolutely.
So when you say cook, do you mean prepare food or do you
prepare
mean to
food,
bang something in a microwave and press a button?
And some of it was preparation, but also some of it was literally what we love laughingly call ping and ching, which is get the packet out, stick it in the microwave.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it wasn't smart.
Nuke it.
It's big saucepans. I mean, that's where they are with it. It's big saucepans. Shove it all in big saucepan, melt it down, do whatever.
Yeah.
It needs looking at.
What's the alternative, realistically, without making it a 5-star hotel kitchen?
Now, that's a difficult one because obviously my initial thought would be to actually farm it out to a catering company.
Actually sub it out.
Although, yes, they're probably going to be looking at a lot more money, but the quality would probably be better.
Mm-hmm. And what about the nutritional content? Would that improve, do you think?
There are things you can do. You don't have to buy loads of stuff to have good nutrition. I mean, the thing that annoys me is if they're buying in frozen stuff, they don't know what's going into that food. I can guarantee it will consist of thickening agents like wheat and flour and sugar to make it taste better. The amount of bread they must go through, because they can't be bothered to think of something other than a sandwich. Apparently that's all pensioners like for their tea. They just like a sandwich and a soup.
So is it a culture of, cost must come into it,
it always does these
days.
And I'm possibly being completely unrealistic.
No, I think it's important that you have, a perspective on this.
I just think that there's got to be a better way. Hmm. There has to be a better way. Whether you employ, a specific... My way of thinking is you would need to look outside and bring them in. Because... you cannot, they don't have the time, I wouldn't imagine, to actually do all the regulations which are involved when you've got a commercial kitchen.
Yeah.
So whether they're a little bit lax on that, I don't know.
But surely they're subject to the same health and hygiene standards that any premises catering for the public, which is what we are.
I would hope so.
That they must be. But I don't know what the answer is. Clearly it will involve some form of investment. But the idea, as you're suggesting, of maybe contracting out for food.
It's what they do in schools.
Well, exactly.
And the level of the food has actually gone up.
Gone up. So why is that not happening? Why is it not rippled out to...
Because it's just too expensive. But, who knows? I think they should give it a try. Because I think there are more creative people out there who will do the right.
Jamie Oliver, of course, did a big project on school dinners food, and so on. Has anyone done anything in the public eye, as it were, perhaps in the media, on hospital food? Or have I missed
seen
that?
I haven't seen anything.
Not seen anything. I would suggest they get the two guys in that do that programme.
You're the hairy bikers.
No, the
Live Well for Better.
Live Well for Better, or Eat Well for Less. Eat Well for Less.
Oh, okay.
Who were really good and actually showed people to cook from scratch, and they cut bills down from one couple was spending nearly £300 a week just on food shopping.
Wow.
And they cut them down to less than 100, didn't they?
But I think with the amount of management and extra staff, you know, management staff that are in hospitals, surely there must be a, you know, somebody there that's tasked to actually look at these things.
Mm. You would have thought so, particularly with all the middle management there is in the NHS.
Well, that's right. And, they've got to start looking at these things. It is a facet that needs... And I'm sure there is somebody there looking at it now.
Mm.
But they're not looking at it properly. They're not looking at it with detached eyes.
Not looking at the bigger picture.
There is actually, I understand here, a review going on about the service at St Mary's, and people, that's you and me, are asked to give our views on this before a trust board meeting, the Health Trust Board meeting, later this year in December, I believe. So there is the opportunity for members of the public, you and me and everyone else,
excellent,
to have our say, and perhaps people should do so, because rather than griping about the food in hospital, let's make a point.
I'm a great believer in that. If you don't like something, the only way to do it is to change it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've got to make that choice to be heard, really.
Yeah, very much so. Moving on from that subject to our final topic for today, and I know when you first came in, Dave, which was still before lunch and still is before lunch.
And still is before lunch.
You're not going to have lunch till 6 o'clock tonight, so be quiet.
I know, terrible, isn't it?
So if you see Lord Philby out in the streets, don't forget, any time before six in the evening, it's good morning, Dave.
I'm wasting away.
Poor chap, he's fading before our very eyes. But I wanted to bring this up because there was a meeting actually right here at the Riverside Centre last week, attended by representatives of Island Rose and the Isle of Wight Council and various other people, including various guest speakers as well, looking at road safety and the condition of the roads here on the island. This isn't a topic about Island Roads particularly at all, but it's a topic where a suggestion was made that there's a call for a 20 mile an hour speed limit on island roads. Now, to be fairly extensively applied, I believe, but not on all roads. I think main roads, the suggestion was perhaps 40 miles an hour. What is the realistic possibility of something like that happening? And is it worth it? Will it make a difference? Or, is it something that we want to see on the island? I know on Jersey, for example, they have a blanket 40 mile an hour speed limit right across the island.
Yep.
They have had for many, many years.
Yes. And great at actual peril.
And yeah, absolutely. They're very hot on enforcing it. Absolutely. You're quite right, but it does have a much better road safety record than we do, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I think, where our road safety record in terms of the tragedy of road deaths and serious injuries puts us in the very top of that league, which we do not want to be.
Sure that 20 miles an hour would actually solve the facts and figures will be presented to me if I'm making a complete buffoon of myself, but I don't think 20 miles an hour on open road is achievable.
No.
I couldn't stick to that. I'm sorry.
Supposing we had a two-tier, any suburban area, or any area, but they call it because they're the restricted areas. It was something to do with the spacing of lampposts, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Still be. But any urban or suburban area, perhaps at 20 30. Miles an hour. Well, it's 30 at the moment, and I'm not sure that the people are saying that that's safe enough, because of the amount of road accidents and so on we have. But where are most of these accidents? Are they on the faster roads, where I suspect that they're more speed means more danger? But 40 miles an hour, I'm going back to it, if it works in Jersey, can we wind the clock back? Would people actually subscribe to it? Would it work, or would the enforcement of it just be impossible?
Would it be enforced? Have we got the resource to do it?
Well, that's another point. Yeah, absolutely.
Because Kim and I were having this discussion earlier on about mobile phone use in vehicles.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a chap now that's just... on the A34, he killed a mother and two, three children.
Yeah.
And he's been he's pleaded guilty to killing by dangerous driving as a result of using his mobile phone while he was driving. And at the end of the day, he's wiped a family out.
And all they're saying is 6 points on the licence, whether or not they will for that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is where, you know, where are the enforcements? I mean, we've all said, how long has it been in that you're not supposed to drive with your mobile phone in your hand or whatever? And has it really been...
Well, it's an interesting point here. Nick in Essex, good afternoon, Nick. Thank you for taking part in this. Just messaged and saying that you will need extra enforcement officers, i.e. a larger police force. Well, at a time, again, when services are being swathed by austerity cuts, you know, it's unlikely to be enforced. But he's suggesting that, you know, 20 miles an hour out outside schools and so on, which to a large extent does happen round and about. Right. But the enforcement, surely, and again, perhaps... I'm not sure if I'm quite right on this, but I'm going to go back to points that you've made on different topics, Kim. Do we take responsibility? Should it have to be enforced? We should take responsibility for being safe around certainly schools and so on. And if there's a speed limit, stick to it. I mean, the people, I'm going off on a little bit here, because the people who complain about speed cameras and speed traps, I sort of think, well, it's not rocket science. If you break the speed limit and get caught, you chose to do it. There's no good whinging about, oh, they're just raising money for this, that and the other by finding me. I'm sorry, I just don't see that at all. If people break the speed limit and get caught, tough. You know, you just don't do it. The reason the speed limit's there is for a reason.
Exactly.
And if you choose not to take responsibility for the speed at which you drive, then you pay the penalty. I'm sorry, you really do. And if that goes to paying for more enforcement officers, then I think that's perfectly legitimate.
I think the majority of the people are respectful of the rules, and they do not break the rules, and certainly not on speed limits. But it's, again, it's the lovely minority who rush around. The middle road and the military road, they frighten me to death. Because, I mean, we were out one day, weren't we? We weren't going slowly. I mean, we were doing about 50, weren't we, along the middle road. And this thing came up, and I don't know where he came from and more or where he went, but he must have been doing over 100, because it was literally a blur. And it's that type of driver that isn't going to give a tutney for...
But
Ben,
you're absolutely right. But we've got to go back to this point that we covered, and I've mentioned again just now, but that we covered some weeks ago about the serious injuries and deaths on island roads put us way, way above where we should be. Well, we shouldn't be anywhere on the league, but we are, and we're at the wrong end of it, i.e. the top, because of our accident record here on the island. What is it about island driving? Is it because that there's a mixture of young guns doing... perhaps risky things and risky speed combined with older people with the cloth cap? I did have a message from one of our colleagues here on the station, James, of James and Judith. James Vaux was saying, well, the 20 mile an hour speed limit operates quite nicely out of our way. It's regulated by cloth cap drivers on a Sunday.
normally it's a tractor.
Yes, or a tractor. Well, that's the other thing. You turn a corner anywhere on the island, probably in any other rural area, at 50 miles an hour, you've got a tractor, you've got a horse, you've got people walking on the road, because there's no people, you know. It's a rural area. Okay, there are obviously towns and so on, but surely it's not rocket science. So what is it? Is it education? Is it enforcement? Is it everything? I don't know.
It's education, isn't it?
Get every driver on the island off to the mainland.
As an aside, last week's topic was about the tunnel.
Yes.
And I wonder if you're only doing 20 miles an hour, whether you'd actually get all the cars through that tunnel. I think you've got to speed it up a bit just to get them through.
There'd be a backlog up to Basingstoke or
something.
Wouldn't there,
you see? We haven't got...
I was just going to say, seriously...
I'm incredibly tongue-in-cheek, I'm sorry.
We do have a bad record. I think there's numerous reasons why. I do think we get the tearaways who just don't care. But I also think some accidents are genuine because you can't actually see, because you've got hedges. We are rural. We ought to be aware of that. I think 20 miles an hour, for me, a little bit too slow, but if it's working some places... But it's going to have to be.
But do you remember, I don't think they're there anymore, but when you came off the ferries at any of the ferry terminals on the island, there was always a sign, a council sign, I believe it was, island roads are different.
Yes,
remember that? They were there the moment you came off. And that was a warning to mainland visitors coming for holiday or the day out, whatever. and that was to tell them Island roads are different. I'm not entirely convinced that that is the case, that they're different any more so than any other rural area. But I think that you are right. There may be a difference here, in which case we need to have a different approach, a different policy. And for me, the Jersey, I'm sorry, I'm going back to it.
Yeah.
Have a 40 mile an hour island wide speed limit. I'm sorry that. And enforce it, however, and the people that choose not to follow that, and there will be plenty, I'm sure, they will fund the enforcement because they will just continually break the law. And that, I'm sorry, seems to me a nice little self-contained unit where you could enforce that and make it safer and pay for itself.
Yeah, absolutely right.
That's my sort of soapbox on that. But,
I think you're right. I still say it comes down to enforcement. And I think it will take time for people to get to grips with it.
Yeah.
But I agree we should do something if we really do have this problem.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
We obviously do.
It's no good just burying our heads in the sand. We've got to do something. And if it's a radical approach that's needed, then so be it.
Yeah.
I mean, to my way of mind, there's not many areas that aren't 30 or 40 miles an hour, is there? Really?
No, but that, like you say, things like the Middle Road.
The Middle Road and the Military Road.
Short stretches on other main roads, main linking roads. But it's the nature of the traffic, the rural lanes, even the main roads have got bends and twists. And like you say, tractors, horses, pedestrians, cyclists, and we're a huge cycling island.
Yeah. And potholes.
And potholes, yeah, well, that's also true. I mean, hopefully on the mend. But anyway, that pretty much already, goodness me, it's nearly 1 o'clock, rounds it off for today. So it just remains for me to say, as always, a big, big thank you to both Kim and Dave for joining me for the Lunchtime Social Debate. It's been fabulous to see you guys, as always,
fascinating
to talk to you and hear your views on various topics. We've covered a lot today. We haven't really had much time to take any messages. If you were trying to get through, then do keep trying. Next week I'll be back on with Kim and Dave next Monday at 12 o'clock, between 12 and 1, for the Lunchtime Social Debate. But this has been the Monday Morning Mix. Dave's off to get some breakfast or lunch or whatever he has at this time of day.
It's lunch now, right?
Jolly good.
Important. Because then I can have afternoon tea, so.
Oh, I see what you've done there. Brilliant. I'll be back on Friday morning for the Andy Knight Radio Show from 10 o'clock. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Monday. Thanks, Kim. Thanks, Dave. And take care. Bye-bye for now.